Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Ted Wells would become one of the most successful defense attorneys in the country. Maybe you know that name. Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, obviously. Edward P. Jones would win the Pulitzer Prize. Stanley Grayson would be a deputy mayor of New York. Eddie Jenkins would play in the NFL. But in 1968, they were all recruits to the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts, brought there by Reverend John Brooks in an experiment in affirmative action. Diane Brady, who you may know as senior editor at Bloomberg Businessweek, is now the author of a completely different kind of book called Fraternity. It's about Father Brooks, this history, and the meaning of mentorship. Diane, welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be here.
I listed the men you follow most closely in the book, but there were 20 new recruits, all freshmen at the time, 1968, except for Clarence Thomas, who came as a sophomore. Give us a sense of how important that class of 1972 was. We're kind of jumping to the end of the story in a way. Where did this particular group of recruited black students wind up?
Well, they did become an incredibly accomplished class, and that's what intrigued me about the story. You know, you often hear about this. Sometimes there's a group of actors in a particular small town, and you think, what is it that made them so accomplished? Obviously, they came, you know, very accomplished themselves. But it was about this one man, and it was right after Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated. So there was a heightened consciousness in this country about what was happening with civil rights. But yet they hadn't really taken much action yet. So this was the first class, really, that brought together this big group of African-American men. Before that, Holy Cross, it had maybe one or two.
The faces on the cover of your book are Clarence Thomas, Eddie Jenkins Jr., Edward P. Jones, Stanley Grayson, Ted Wells. But this is really a book about Reverend John Brooks, the man who is now the president of Holy Cross. Who is he?
He's president emeritus. And at that time, he started out as a theology professor. He was head of the theology department. And he just had this interest in social justice. And he'd been trying to recruit black students. He hadn't had much luck. And it was really the death of Martin Luther King Jr. that gave him the impetus to actually get in his car, go out and just almost physically yank a lot of them and recruit them with money to Holy Cross.
Father Brooks wasn't just in favor of admitting more black students. He was for giving them extra consideration and for really mentoring them so that the campus was a welcoming place. And you write about how he carefully handpicked those 20 men. What was his motivation?
I think his motivation was not even so much this, you know, we must help black men, the same as he pushed equally to get women into Holy Cross. That was his move as well. I think it was that he felt the college was losing out on a generation of leaders. And his basic instinct is that there are leaders in all parts of society, and he wanted to make sure that they weren't limiting themselves to a very narrow pool. In this case, Polish, Irish, Italian, Catholic kids. He wanted to expand and basically help to train the next generation.
The affirmative action debate, still quite young at that time in 1968, was taking place all across the country. How did Holy Cross compare to other colleges and universities at the time?
I think the following year you saw a huge influx, and also to Holy Cross, you saw a huge influx of African Americans, and that partly came after the assassination of Dr. King. In this particular situation, I think Holy Cross was one of the pioneers, but let's not forget that it was also a very white college on a hill in Worcester, Massachusetts. If you had urban colleges, they were becoming more integrated. But this was a push you saw around the country. Obviously, there we saw the riots at Columbia. There was a lot going on at that time. So it was not unique to Holy Cross. If anything, it's a microcosm of what was happening in America.
Diane Brady, author of the book Fraternity, about this group of black students and their mentor, Father Brooks, a theology professor, you said?
Yes, and then he became president halfway through. And, you know, one thing that's interesting, part of my hesitation about the book was I didn't want it to be a white priest saving a bunch of black students, because that really wasn't the case. They were, especially with Ted Wells, Clarence Thomas, highly accomplished students. And that, I think, was something that he recognized, was he wasn't going out just looking for anybody. He was looking for people that he thought had real leadership potential and could make it.
Let's talk about Ted Wells and Clarence Thomas, because they were both close with Father Brooks, But as you describe, one went – I mean, we know that one went on to become an important conservative on the Supreme Court who hates affirmative action. He's really outspoken about what happened to him during Yale Law School and other things. And the other, Ted Wells, is a prominent Democrat who's been honored by the NAACP. In fact, you write that Thomas didn't fit into the rest of the crowd very much at Holy Cross and that he had a particularly uneasy relationship with Wells.
I think he was an incredibly competitive man. I think he was – and he, you probably see it today. If somebody said the sky was blue, he would just say, well, it's actually a, you know, subtle shade of gray. So he had a little bit of a devil's advocate in him. In fact, both of them fought to be leaders of the Black Student Union. So I think it was – there was an admiration. There was a competitiveness. They were usually the last two in the library at Holy Cross. Why they took different paths, I think, may have a lot to do with the mindset and the experiences they had growing up. The other thing that's interesting about Thomas is he loved Holy Cross. He hated Yale. And I think the reason he loved Holy Cross was he felt that he was judged for himself and he was held to standards that he was able to meet. And there wasn't a sense that he was there because he was Black. Where he really felt the sting of affirmative action, I think, was when he went to Yale.
So Thomas has spoken on the record about Holy Cross and distinguished that experience, even though you characterize it as affirmative action, from his Yale experience?
He does, because what happened essentially at – what happened with Holy Cross was he had this incredibly bitter experience. He was a seminarian en route to becoming a priest himself, and there's this famous story where the night that Dr. King died, somebody basically said he got what he deserved, and at that point – he lost faith in the church. That he went to a Catholic school was very much a case of Holy Cross reached out to him. They offered him money. The reason he got that money was clearly because he was a student that Father Brooks had pushed for, but he met the standards. There was no question. In fact, he hit the ground running. If anything, he was already one of the top students in the class. Yale was much more of a sense that he felt lucky to be there, and everybody felt he didn't deserve to be there. So I think it was a case as well of the reaction he got when he went to Yale.
And Thomas had concerns even at Holy Cross about affirmative action. You write about debates that he and Ted Wells had at Black Student Union meetings, which were so intense they were called Sunday Night Theater.
Yeah, and I think they're both larger-than-life personalities. They clearly both like to make people laugh. That's one thing that you don't see as much in public anymore, is that Clarence Thomas is actually an incredibly funny person, incredibly jovial. And so a lot of it was entertainment. But no question, Thomas was somebody who had a lot of friends that were white, as did Wells, but I think Wells was much more comfortable identifying himself as part of the Black community and really fighting for civil rights.
The two came back to Holy Cross together just a few years ago, didn't they?
For the 40th anniversary of the union that they helped to found. And it was interesting because during the period, some students were recreating a debate on affirmative action on stage. It was Ted Wells that went over to Justice Thomas and brought him out of the room, basically, so they could go look at some displays. I think what the logic was is he didn't want his friend to be uncomfortable. He didn't want it to be a political exercise. He wanted the two of them to be going back with everybody else and celebrating the experience that they'd had back in the late 60s.
Do you just call them friends? Are they friends to this day?
I think it's, you know, when you see them, they're friendly. I think that it's so complicated at this point. There's so much on different sides of the debate. And you get the sense with Justice Thomas that he hasn't really integrated much with the community of friends he left behind. I don't want to say he seems a bit like a lonely man, but I think in that setting he certainly does. But the interesting thing was when he went back to Holy Cross, he fit right in. He was welcomed with open arms, and he seemed very comfortable. And, you know, when I talked to him about Father Brooks, he got tears in his eyes. This is a man who clearly meant a lot to him in his life and clearly understood where he was coming from and the anger he felt at that time and just treated him like a kid, like any other kid.
This was the class of 72 at Holy Cross, so it's been exactly 40 years since this experiment. Were future classes at Holy Cross as successful? Can you point to dozens of Black luminaries that came out of there year after year after year?
You know, there has not been the same community replicate. There certainly have been a lot of high-performing African-American and other students and women. That was also the last class when they graduated of all men at Holy Cross. But I think that there's been a certain disappointment, again, not just at Holy Cross, but across the country as to what's happened with black men in colleges, what's happened with just the state of minorities in general in college. And so I think that, no, you can't say it's been replicated. And there's a lot of debate as to why that is. And one thing is you look at the energy the country had after Martin Luther King died, and you look at the responsibility that these men felt themselves, Ted Wells, Clarence Thomas, they all felt an incredible desire, an incredible responsibility to be leaders. And I think that whether that was replicated as we went on, I don't know. But clearly they understood that a lot was resting on their shoulders.
Do you come to a conclusion in the book on the effects of affirmative action overall? There are still, as you just said, these major gaps in income and employment, in education. You sent us a statistic that more than half of black students at elite law schools finish their first year in the bottom 10% of the class. So what's your verdict?
Well, affirmative action means so many different things. And where affirmative action is racial preferences and letting people in or relaxing standards because of those preferences, I think that's what people take issue with. But when you actually have a case where you're creating a playing field that's equal, then I think that it has worked well, where you're giving people equal opportunity, and in this case, really giving them the support. So Father Brooks did not hold these men to different academic standards. In no way were they treated differently, except that he recognized it was tough.
Let's take a phone call. Lloyd in Elizabeth. You're on WNYC. Hello, Lloyd.
Hey, hi. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had the privilege of meeting Mr. Wells. I have not with Justice Thomas. But I would like to ask your guests, you know, in addition to everything that she learned from Justice Thomas, his thinking on things like the death penalty. I mean, wholly aside from his experience, he came up in an era where the law was very unfair and was used against blacks, yet he can sit on a court and affirm things like the death penalty. Did he ever speak to that, and what do you think about that?
You know, it's interesting. I actually took me a full year to get access to Justice Thomas, and one reason, I think, was that he had a real hesitation about what my motives were, whether I was going to go in and start asking about decisions he'd made on the Supreme Court, Anita Hill. So we did not get into sort of his worldview, except that he is somebody who feels he's been defined by his skin color. And I think it's, you know, it is something that has been perplexing, I think, in the African-American community and, frankly, the wider community, the degree to which people feel some of his decisions have actually gone against the interests of the community. I think that that's something that he certainly has his own explanation for, which is he doesn't want to be put in a box.
Lloyd, thank you. Call us again, please. And there is another legal battle that's relevant as far as Justice Thomas is concerned. The Supreme Court has not yet decided whether it will take up the University of Texas case. That's the case of a young woman who claims that the university denied her admission because she is white. Can you give us a little bit of background on where that stands and what it would mean for affirmative action if that case is heard?
Well, it is definitely, there have been efforts to try and strike down, especially at the university level, racial preferences. And the last time we saw it was the University of Michigan, 2003. And one of the people that was vehemently against their policies was Clarence Thomas.
And isn't that the policy by which they take the top 10% of any high school in the state? So there's an attempt not to have it be racial, but since we know schools are so segregated, it is a backdoor way to be inclusive?
I think it is, and I think judging people on their economic status has actually been seen to be more effective. California, there are a lot of states in this country that do not support affirmative action. If anything, they have been able to increase the percentage of minorities through other ways, through more effective ways. So whether or not the Supreme Court hears this particular case, I'm not sure. But clearly this is an issue that keeps coming up. And also when you look at the opinions, even the presidential race, a lot of issues around race.
Diane Brady, senior editor at Bloomberg Businessweek, is now the author of Fraternity, a book about the class of 1972 at Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts. Fascinating. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC.